Good morning, Unity Church in Albany.
Good morning.
It's great to be with you this morning. Just 1 week ago, our senior minister, Reverend Crystal Muldrow, was talking about Jonah and the whale. This week, she's in a boat with Jonah, watching the whale. Someone drew the picture of a shark and a blackboard in the classroom. I don't know who did that. Reverend Crystal's been here for a year, and she has asked me to help her revitalize the prayer ministry at Unity Church in Albany. She's asked me to make some commitments, and I asked her on her anniversary if she would set aside one Sunday in between her various lecture series to talk about meditation and prayer. She quickly grabbed up her calendar, wrote, February the 5th is Meditation and Prayer Sunday. Oh, and by the way, I'm not going to be here. Let me know how it goes. So here we are, right where things happened 22 years and 1 week ago. I'm just starting my 23rd year here. 2 years and 1 week ago, I walked into this church having not been churched in 30 years. I walked in the desert for 30 years, spiritually speaking. I had only been in two Protestant churches, one for a wedding, one for a funeral. I had no idea what to expect. I was scared to death. And I refused. I felt incompetent to volunteer for anything. Usher, food, no, couldn't do it. But I went to the Wednesday class, and one night I just took a deep breath, and I turned to the late Paul Barnard, who headed the prayer ministry, and I said, Paul, I'd like to pray. And I've been doing it for almost 22 years. So that's my frame of mind. I was doing nothing at all, and then I dove in off the deep end. So my question to you this morning is, what do Jesus, who is the prophet Yeshua, what do Yeshua, Myrtle Fillmore, and Lynn Davis have in common? I'm sure you know the first two. Lynn Davis, like me, is from Rensselaer, New York. Sue goes back far enough to remember Lynn Davis. She's my age or a little older. Jesus and Myrtle formed prayer circles that became worldwide movements. Lynn Davis formed a prayer circle that grew to become Unity Church in Albany. Prayer is central to the Unity movement. The Fillmores envisioned people coming from many different churches, learning how to pray and bringing that message back to their congregations. However, there's folks like us who said, we're not going back. And now we have Unity Churches. So, volunteering for the prayer circle got me more enthusiastic. I prayed more often. I meditated more often. I got better at it. I learned that I could get peaceful and enjoy peace that I had only known sporadically in the past because of prayer. Who here has been to Hawaii? Plenty of people have been to Hawaii. If you've been to Hawaii and if you've gotten to know any Native Hawaiians, you probably know that the friendly term for a fair-skinned European is haole. What does haole mean? It's not pejorative. When the Europeans first went to the Pacific, they brought their missionaries with them. Their missionaries told the locals, pray the Lord's Prayer and you'll have a sacred experience. Well, the locals saw that you could recite the Lord's Prayer in 30 to 60 seconds, and they knew intuitively it takes 10 or 20 minutes minimum to have a sacred experience. So they named these fair-skinned Europeans haoles. It means shallow breathers. So the first part of the talk today is about meditation, which is the door to which is breath. So how is it that a schoolboy can recite the Lord's Prayer in 30 seconds, And we could have a 10-minute meditation this morning on just one of the 8 sentences in the Lord's Prayer. The difference is, Yeshua lived in Palestine, what we now call Israel, and he spoke a language called Aramaic. And Aramaic was poetic. Aramaic could convey a fullness of messages that's not reflected in the scripture as we read them today. Think for a minute. Scripture was translated from Aramaic to Greek, and from Greek to Latin, and from Latin to German, where the printing press was invented. And then, when King James made it no longer illegal to read scripture, it was translated into English. And this last fellow, this King James, he was a politician. He made this decision for political reasons, and he gave the translators an unrealistic deadline. So we're reading a fourth generation translation that was done under duress. So politicians like Constantine and James I have meddled with spiritual interpretation for their own reasons. It's happened over and over and over again. So no wonder people turn to Charles Fillmore, who is willing to drill down through those 4 translations to the bedrock of metaphysical truth. That's why we keep coming back week in and week out. Well, I learned in my studies, because I like to get the historical spin on things, I'm that kind of nerd, that if you go all the way back to the Aramaic and translate directly from the Aramaic, you get that beautiful meditation that we had this morning. We have this because one group of Yeshua's followers moved into the Persian Empire, where they were isolated and insulated from the theology of Rome, the theology of the Greek church, and the theology of the Coptic or Egyptian church, where they just kept reading Yeshua's word in Yeshua's language and hearing it and mulling it and allowing it to mean what it means to them each time they hear it, because that's the way the Mideastern mind works. His name means Yah, the one nameless being. Shua restores. Yeshua restores what eye has not seen, ear has not heard, and what has not risen in the human heart. The word Allah, the word Yeshua used for God, has, like all Aramaic words, many different meanings. Among them, unity, oneness, that which has no opposite, divine mind. So nouns have multiple meanings. Verbs have multiple tenses. When you take something, a sentence that says, let there be light, and you translate it as, there was light, it's a lot easier to think of the divine as principle and not as a bearded codger. So the language has many literal meanings. It's metaphoric. You can relate it to your life. And it's mystical. It's words that point to the mystic's real message. We're not analyzing in a straightforward, linear way, you know, which started with the Greeks and ended up with Newton all the way over after the King James Bible. We're no longer thinking in a linear way. We're mulling over this message in a circular way, a zigzag way, a spiritual way, an intuitive way. How did Yeshua tell us to pray? He came right out and told us. Yeshua said, pray in the closet. Did he mean closet yourself? No, that's not what he meant. The same word that's translated as closet means a story that reveals something behind it. It's an invitation to meditate on the meaning of his words. Yeshua said to us, shut the door. Shut the door between your worldly concerns, your ego mind, and your intuitive spirit core. Yeshua said to us, pray to the Father in secret. Does this mean I can't tell my wife? The same word that means secret, that is translated as secret, also means veil, inner sight, or insight. It's that which we see with our insight. Veil, is that moving us closer or further from the truth? Does the veil get in the way? Well, in the Mideastern mind, when you contemplate spiritual principle, it's formless. And the mind's eye suspects that it's there. But until you're capable of throwing that veil over the sacred truth, you can't see the outline. Once the veil is tossed over it, you can see the outline. You can see it a little better. You can cleave to it. You can take it. Once you accept it, your spiritual, intuitive wisdom cleaves to that. It doesn't make any difference how fleeting the moment was. It's there. And what else did Yeshua say about how do we meditate? He says, the Father will reward you openly. Does this mean he'll give me a Cadillac in front of my next door neighbor? The word that's been translated as openly also means that which is revealed or that which is manifested. That bit of wisdom that was revealed to you during meditation or that subsequent to your meditation you were able to manifest something in this world that you'd been struggling with before. So now that we're halfway through the talk, we've boiled it down to one sentence that you've heard over and over again in Unity churches. What you think about comes about. Unity principle number 3, everything starts as a thought. So we are spirit. We carry our intuitive wisdom with us all the time, but we have to flex that muscle. It can be enlarged and enriched with practice and contemplation. I surprised myself. The surgery went well, the occupational therapy went well, but my coffee cup shakes. I, too, have been to Hawaii, but I've only been there for 2.5 hours. I was on board an aircraft, a military transport, taking service people to work. It dropped people off in Alaska, Hawaii, Guam, Wake Island, Yokota, Japan, and the Republic of Vietnam. People on this airplane, the majority of them, were staying for the final destination. And the airplane was rife with fear. Fear was palpable. They stopped at before dawn in Honolulu to refuel the plane and let off a couple of GIs. And I just instinctively got up and walked down the steps and walked to a bench in, not darkness, but found a bench next to some potted plants and just sat there. I sat there and the sun came up. It's Hawaii. There's holes in the roof. The sunlight just comes in. Once it exists, it's there. It's all around you. And the plants that were next to me started waking up, and I started noticing the colors. And an orchid, at least I'm calling it an orchid because I don't know much about posies. An orchid opened up right in front of me. And I had stumbled into another meditative experience. I've been stumbling into them all my life, but never knew how to repeat them, never knew how to maximize the effect. I stumbled into a meditative experience that gave me peace, just feet from an airplane full of fear. I stumbled into these meditative moments often, and I would have epiphanies like that one, and I found unlikely teachers. And the most consistent teachers were comedians, because they make you laugh. When they make you laugh, your physical tension and your emotional tension drops, and the message goes right straight through to spirit. And that's why we intuitively like the comedians. We like to be present. So the early comedians that I saw on television, they taught me the ironies of family life, things I wasn't getting growing up with a severely handicapped sibling. Then the comedians became socially aware. Dick Gregory and Richard Pryor. And I became socially aware, and I began to take a stand. I began having spiritual values based on what I was hearing others talk about. And occasionally, there were comedians who actually talked about spiritual topics. Anybody remember Flip Wilson? Flip Wilson had a character who refused to take responsibility for any of her actions. And we knew intuitively that this was wrong. We knew that, in the words of the day, this was a cop-out. Everything was blamed either on the devil, and we already know that the divine has no opposite, so there ain't no devil. Or she blamed it on her boyfriend, Killer. That's what you get for hanging out with someone named Killer. The other comedian who spoke directly to me about spiritual topics was Mel Brooks, as the 10,000-year-old man. He was asked in an interview, "How did you learn stuff?" He said, "Phil told us. Phil knew how to make bows and arrows. He taught us to hunt. Phil taught us to make fire with two sticks." We respected Phil, but then one day, lightning struck a tree, and it burst into flame instantaneously, and it rocked our world. There's a power greater than Phil. I knew that was true, even though I wasn't going to church. Affirmations and denials. This character could have been affirming the truth, but instead chose to avoid the truth. We must monitor our words. The words that come out of our mouths reflect what we're thinking. So just as last fall when we studied Emily Cady downstairs, denials and affirmations, deny the falsehoods and affirm your highest truth in all that you say. How do you monitor that? God says, imagine that God says, every time you speak, right you are. We've been beating up on this pew all year. Crystal punched it 2 weeks ago. I'm kicking it. If I stub my toe on that pew and curse and swear at myself, God says, right you are. And if I say, I am a beloved child of God, and my birthright is perfect health, perfect wealth, and perfect love, God says, right you are. Carry that message forward. If you're praying for things and outcomes, consider that. Be concise, but not precise. Ask for what you want. Don't be vague. Don't say, I just want a different partner in my next relationship. Say, I want my right and perfect partner, or you're going to make another mistake like I did before I learned to be more precise in what I ask for. And a simple prayer, when you're uncertain of what to say, is, God, this or something better. Somebody once put me in a professional position where they asked me to take a demotion, and I said, no, my motto is, this or something better. I've worn a lot of different hats in this community. I've been your treasurer, and I've also been a storyteller. So I'm going to tell you a story now. To reflect, this is my storytelling hat. I want to reflect what you get when you're precise about what you ask for. You know, some folks here, like John Reese, who have known me even longer than I've been in this church, they know that I was single for 10 years. And during that 10-year period, I came to realize that I was the one who was keeping me single all those years, because my talents were more asocial than they were social. So I decided one day, made this decision, that about a third of my social life was in the jazz clubs. And I was meeting a lot of empty wells in these jazz clubs. So I decided I was going to take a physical step. I was going to say out loud, I'm not wasting time on empty wells. And physically, in the physical manifest world, I'm going to have a new business card made, because my business card had three phone numbers, only one of which was valid. So I had the new card made, and I promised myself when I got into the jazz clubs, if I even suspected I was dealing with an empty well, I would pull out the card and say, if you'd like to have dinner and jazz with me sometime, give me a call. Well, once I made that decision, I never had to give out a card. I just continued my quest to take this large group of acquaintances and large group of companions and move them up, promote them to friend and intimate friend. And once I had a sufficient supply of intimate friends, I could find a life partner. So that's my goal, and I stuck with it. And when I got derailed, a friend said, 31 days in the month, 31 chapters in Proverbs, better get reading. So another significant portion of my social life is in the gym. I had numerous companions in the gym, which it was up to me to start inviting them out to coffee and whatnot and making them friends. So one day, when I truly was looking forward to difficult discussions with a friend, because I was at a crossroads in my professional life, my friend, who was a workaholic in her own right, stood me up. So I'm left to my friends. Well, one of my friends in the gym had told me sometime prior that she paid a handyman to install her air conditioner. I gave her my card. I said, you don't have to pay to have someone lift an air conditioner. Us single people have to stick together. Well, on this particular day in the gym, and I've got no one going to meet me and talk and allow me to bare my soul about this professional turning point, I marched back out into the gym floor, and I walked up to my companion, and I invited her to be a friend. I said, let's have dinner. She accepted. And we met at a restaurant. We're both storytellers. We clicked. We chatted and chatted and chatted and chatted. So much so that when I left without her phone number. So fast forward another just a week or 10 days. We haven't run into each other in the gym. My phone rings. Guess who's got my card? So we're getting along. I asked for a second date. On the second date, my new friend senses that this is moving a little faster than normal and hits me with a difficult question. He says, how is your emotional life? Woo! So, I now know where that was coming from, but I didn't on that day. And I took a deep breath, and I said, it's been a rocky road, and I have a program, I have a counselor, and I have a circle of supporting friends, and I'm proud of who I am today. And I said, I'll see your bet, and I'll raise you one. I said, what's your spiritual practice? And she was a little surprised, and then she smiled, and she looked at me and said, I believe in a power greater than Phil. Well, needless to say, we were off to the races. And, you know, and unfortunately, one of Sharon's very dearest friends died right about that time. And I got to show her what real spirituality is like, that you don't run from tears and you don't shirk when other people are in grief. And the end of that story is we've been married for over 13 years. And we're still believing in a power greater than Phil. So when you're in need, make time to pray. Moment to moment, and special times, and also occasions of deep meditation. And you're not alone. Access the Unity in Albany Prayer Ministry. We're happy to pray with you. And we pass it on to Unity Village, where it's prayed for by hundreds of people for another month. So it's time for our affirmation. Words have power. I choose my words wisely. Together, please. Words have power. I choose my words wisely. Okay, now this time loud enough for Crystal to hear. Words have power. I choose my words wisely. Verily, verily, I say to you, go forth and speak your highest truth during this week. And I want every one of you to know that I do love you madly.